part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm gonna do it part. I'm gonna do it part-time. I'm gonna do it part. Fanboy.com.
Okay, well, my name is Christian Horn, and this is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am on the line with Joshua Crowther, right?
It's Crowther.
Crowther. Well, I screw up names. I apologize. Joshua Crowther. And you are the writer and creator of the comic Super, correct?
Yep. Yes. That'd be me.
And you're currently running a Kickstarter, which happens to have the honor of, now explain it to me, the percentage, as far as, like, it's the highest percentage funded, is that correct, or?
Yeah, it's the highest percentage ever overfunded on Kickstarter. I think right now, I'm just looking at it, it's at 81,566% funded.
Well, can you explain to the audience how you achieved that? Because, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, before we get into the comic, but you sort of had a plan when you were setting up your Kickstarter, correct?
Yeah, I did. So basically, I ran a Kickstarter for Super Issue 3, and it ended up not getting funded the first time.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so I decided to do it again, and what I did is I set a $3 goal. And basically, the whole reasoning behind that, it wasn't like I was making potato salad or anything.
Yeah.
What I was thinking is Kickstarter says to think of making the lowest goal possible to finish your product and actually be able to get the pledge tiers out to people, the rewards.
Gotcha.
So I realized that I'd already paid for the art. Uh-huh. So I thought about it again, and I was like, well, how much money would it really take if I wanted to print one book and send it to one person if just one person backed it? So the answer was $3. So that's what I set the goal as. And it's been doing a lot better, actually. I think we have like 156 backers this time. I think last time I had more people that wanted to back but saw it wasn't close.
Uh-huh.
And some of the backers that did back the project were upset that they didn't get the book. And I just wanted to make sure that, you know, if you want the book, you get the book.
Gotcha. Yeah, so what was your original goal, though? Like, when you say that, because I didn't know that you ran a Kickstarter before. Like, what was the original, like, cap that you were trying to reach?
I think it was somewhere around $8,000.
Gotcha.
I did run a Kickstarter before that for the second issue of Super.
Uh-huh.
And it did, that one did reach $9,000. So I was trying to just pay myself back for the art.
Yeah.
So I included that in the price the first time.
Uh-huh.
But this time I just decided, you know what, I paid for the art, it's fine. It's not fair to put that pressure on the backers to, you know, get paid back for that art or whatever. I should just make them pay retail, like if you went to a store, because it's, you're jumping in early, why should you be paying more, right?
Oh, so. interesting. So with the first issue of Super, was that, did you print that up and sell that yourself somewhere, or like at stores, or how did that go? Because I was introduced to it through the third issue, and you know, people should know, like, when they back your Kickstarter at a certain level, which for me it was like something like $9-$12 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was like you sort of get a version of the digital issues for free, like before you even get the print mailed to you, or you can just buy the digital issues, correct?
Yeah, so I wanted to create, like, I back a lot of comic Kickstarters.
Okay.
And I wanted to create a Kickstarter where you get what you pledge for really fast, because sometimes you're waiting like months and months for these like projects that you back to get finished and actually get the comic.
Yeah.
So what I did, even the first time when I ran the Kickstarter, we were only a couple weeks away from getting everything illustrated.
Uh-huh.
And obviously this time when we got it finished, it was completely illustrated. So the moment you hit the pledge button, you get to get the standard version of the PDFs by going through the one of the backer updates.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But at the end of the campaign, I will create, there will be these Kickstarter digital versions as well, which will have like script pages and some extra art, like early art and stuff. So
okay. Yeah, no, I mean, it's a really interesting move, because usually there's like you had done originally, you know, a large goal, you know, or semi-large, however, you know, a couple thousand to, you know, some people it's like 100,000 or whatever to complete whatever project it is. But it's kind of a crafty way to turn things on their head on Kickstarter to say like, it's just $3, you know, and, you know, that's the price of what the actual issue would be. So you're basically sort of just eating the cost of the production, of actually like getting the art made and the coloring and the lettering?
Yeah, basically. Illustrating an issue of Super costs like about $4,000.
Wow.
But when I first started doing the comic, I was really serious about really wanting to get into comics, and I was just working at like for Discover Card, and I was just putting away money each month saying that I'm going to do a comic one day.
Yeah.
And I'm going to save up for it. So I did put enough away to at least finish my first story arc, which is to get to 5 issues.
Okay.
The entire plan that I have is 15 issues, but I don't have enough money to do prints. That's what I decided to do, is just we'll just raise money for prints.
No, I mean, that's understandable. I mean, especially with the way the comics market is. So you always wanted to do your own comic. You weren't interested in, or were you ever interested in like going to work for the big two or anything like that?
For the first comic, I just kind of wanted to do it on my own.
Uh-huh.
I hardly ever read any of the big two comics. Like, I hardly read DC Marvel. I mainly just read Image, Vertigo. Well, Vertigo is DC, but it's not DC.
Yeah.
And Dark Horse. And those kind of comics just always interested me more, so I didn't have an interest for it, especially with the way DC and Marvel handle, like, intellectual property. Like, they get last say on how you write your story, and they constantly, like, take writers' stories and tell them, no, you can't do this, you need to do it this way.
Sure. So the indie model appealed to you more?
Yeah, like any comic that I see on Kickstarter, people do it exactly how they want to write their comic, and I didn't want to have any constraints.
Yeah, that's really great. I mean, yeah, Kickstarter definitely seems to be a sort of way for a lot of indie talent to get funding and get their projects going. I mean, because it's interesting that you say you don't read the big two, but before we kind of go any further with my line of questioning, why don't you explain to people what Super is? Because actually, you're the second indie comic that I've creator that I've interviewed that has a comic called Super. The first one was like Super with an exclamation point. It's like Super, you know what I mean? So yours is like Super, you know, and regardless of that, you know, what is your comic about?
Yeah, so I basically wanted to create the most realistic quote-unquote superhero story that ever existed. So it's about this one young man who ends up getting like these really powerful superpowers, sort of like if you had the most classic ones that you see, like flight, super strength, and vulnerability, like the kind you see Thor, Superman, or Iron Man have when he puts on his suit, like just those golden age powers where they're like super, super powerful. But just set them loose in the real world, like with, instead of fighting supervillains or aliens, like go into more real world stuff, like what's going on in the Middle East and things that would be harder to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, Well, I've read the first three issues, and I think it's a really solid story that you've kind of built for yourself. But one of the things that really appealed to me is, I mean, I'm a fan of Superman, you know, or I was up until like the new 52 or whatever, you know. It's a character that I've been a fan of for a long time, you know, for whatever reasons. I don't know if you went back and like researched the podcast or whatever, but we've done different episodes of like, you know, every once in a while I'll go into a rant of why I like Superman. And to me, this very much was like kind of like Superman in the real world, but without the costume. It was almost like taking Smallville and like going like, what if that show decided to say, take a chance and address real life issues? You know what I mean? So
yes.
Was that an influence for you? Were you ever a big Superman fan? Was that something that you were ever into? Or
I did watch Smallville, but Smallville is very much like episodic, like villain of the week type show.
Yeah, yeah.
But the idea of having someone not in a costume, I don't think really quite came from that. Obviously, I want to be sort of like a satire of superhero comics, so there are ideas that I do draw from, obviously, from Superman. But it wasn't just him. I was looking at like the most common hero archetype. So you do have like Clark Kent, who's a farmer, but you also have like Luke Skywalker, who's a farmer. You have King Arthur, and like pretty much all throughout like the hero's journey type of thing.
Yeah.
It's sort of like Superman drew on that, and I'm drawing from that too. So that's why there ends up being so many similarities, I think.
Huh. It's interesting because, you know, I mean, I'm looking at the first issue now, and I'm wondering if any of this was your influence, or was it, did the artist have a little bit of creative, you know, leeway to go with what he wanted to do? Because, you know, looking at the first issue, you even have a scene here with like a white dog and he's pulling yep. on a blanket. And I'm like, come on, that's, I'm not saying that is crypto, but I'm like, come on, that looks a lot like, you know, it's a homage or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it definitely is. Like yeah. I said, I'm trying to create a satire of like the superhero genre, and that will have winks and nods to like other famous like superheroes and stuff. So yeah, that definitely is a crypto reference that I told him to put in there.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, and you know, I mean, there's the whole, you know, because I mean, when Smallville kind of first started, he would dress like in blues and reds, and you know what I mean, like different shades of color. And that your main character has like a red flannel shirt, plaid shirt, and you know, like a blue jacket. And then you've got, there's also does he work for the government, or is he a contractor for the government? The bald guy who sort of maybe being set up as a villain, but seems a little bit more sympathetic than that. So there's definitely a lot of things when I was reading it, and I was like, oh, that's fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so I guess I just figured like, oh, this guy might be a Superman fan or have that. But are you saying that you never kind of were, or?
Oh, well, I like watched the movies and stuff, and I read I read the like DC stuff that's considered like the must reads, like The Killing Joke. I've read Red Sun, stuff like that. But other than like the big like old titles like Batman Year One, I pretty much just read other companies. So I'm a fan of Superman, but like that's more from like a kid watching the TV shows, like the animated TV shows and the movies and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, whether you know it or not, there's definitely an influence to me, you know, and I appreciate it. I mean, I was very much like, oh, this is a very sort of like interesting take, taking a spin on like what is an idea that's been around for a very long time. And obviously with a character like Superman, you cannot put him, you know, into real life situations, you know.
And
you've taken your character and, you know, not to spoil anything, but as you said earlier, he does sort of get involved in Middle East politics a little bit, right?
Yeah, it definitely does. I every time I'm like watching a superhero movie, I remember watching Iron Man, and at the beginning of the movie, you see him land like in the Middle East and he does some stuff and helps out. But in the end, it just goes back to like some big super powered fist fight with robot suits, right?
Yeah.
That's part of that's a movie that influenced me, because I was thinking about what would really happen if like it just didn't go in, if they stayed with him just trying to help out in politics. But obviously, when you have big IP characters like that, that's just like a hornet's nest that you don't really want to touch.
Yeah, but it's really interesting because characters like that, you know, if you know sort of your comics history, I mean, the first issue of Captain America had him punching Hitler out, you know what I mean? I mean,
yep.
You know, so it's interesting the way things have developed. But I mean, what I really found, you know, interesting in this and what I really enjoyed is that, you know, you do have this character that's, you know, raised on a farm. Things don't necessarily go, you know, he is raised in a loving environment and stuff like that, but things don't necessarily go well for him and his family. And there's still sort of like he still has a moral backbone. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
He doesn't seem to have gone dark, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I talked to a lot of people about this idea when I was like, when I'm at comic conventions, and I'm like, he has these superpowers, and like, what would really happen if someone went really powerful? And everyone's like, oh, obviously he'd go and rob banks and go do that.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I was thinking, what would you do if you really did want to help? So I did create a character where he ultimately does want to help, and he is a good guy and has a moral backbone.
Yeah.
But at the same time, without having superheroes or supervillains, there's less guidance with what you're supposed to do if you want to help.
Like,
if he goes and like everyone's like, well, you go find the bad guy and you go beat him up. So, and it's that simple. But think about like what happened with Iraq, right? We go find Saddam Hussein, we get rid of him, but now look where Iraq is,
yeah,
with ISIS and everything.
Yeah, you kind of make a bigger mess by going in. Yeah. It's interesting though, because the temptation, it always seems like in a lot of the alternate sort of, and not to belabor the point or say that you're doing like a Superman archetype, but you know, yeah, is that he would go dark, you know what I mean? Is that, you know, he would kill, like if he wasn't, and you have a very specific moment, I think, in the second issue where, uh-huh, there's a really, he saves someone, a woman in the Middle East, and he doesn't kill people, like, and he's asked about it, and he's like, you know, why, you know what I mean? Like, there's sort of,
yeah,
like, can you speak to that a little bit? Because to me, it always seems like the easy way out to say like, yeah, this guy would, but you've kind of taken it a little bit of a different way. Does that make sense? Like what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I think he was raised probably like, you know, in those farming towns where you're like raised religiously, and like, he's never been in the military or anything before. So he's just an everyday guy. Like, killing someone for the first time would be just, I don't know, really difficult. And I don't think that's something that you would go do if you've never, like, if one day you just went from your normal civilian life and decide you want to help out. I mean, you're invincible anyway. Like, I don't think you jump straight into killing people. That's,
yeah,
something that you have to, like, work up towards. But not that I'd say that the story's ever going to go that way, but
yeah,
I just don't think, like, innately when you're raised in, like, normal everyday civilian life that you're a killer.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's a really good point. I find that really interesting because, like I said, everyone seems to think like as soon as you would just gain any moment of any bit of power or strength that you would use it to lash out at people. But I mean, he kind of does in a way, but at the same time, you know, when he's offered an easy opportunity, he's like, no, I'm not going to do this. Right.
Yeah.
So what was your impetus to sort of like place the story in the Middle East? I mean, obviously, you know, because when Superman Returns came out like several years ago, and,
uh-huh,
I saw it, I wasn't a big fan of the movie or whatever. There were things I liked about it, but whatever. You know, I had a friend who was not into comics, and we were kind of just, mm-hmm, chatting about it. And he's like, yeah, you know, and this is like during the Bush years, you know, we're,
mm-hmm,
we're definitely,
yeah,
in Iraq, things are going on. And, things are going on. That's like a really horrible way to say that. But, you know, things are happening in the Middle East. And the thing is that my friend, we were kind of like chatting, and he's like, yeah, there's that scene where he kind of like flies up into the sky and is like listening to the world. And he just like turns to me. He's like, couldn't he just go after Bin Laden? And I was like,
yeah,
yeah, that's a really good point. And obviously, you know, the Middle East is kind of like a power keg right now. But what made you want to do that specifically? Like, do you have a sort of reasoning behind that, or is it just because it's the biggest issue in of our time right now?
Well, I wanted to think, like, what's made primarily, like, on the news.
Yeah.
I think, like, the character himself would just, like, if he realizes he has these powers and he wants to go help people and he's that powerful, he's not going to go do, like, Spider-Man-ish type stuff and go stop bank robbers, right?
Yeah.
He's going to be watching the news, and right now the U.S. and CNN, they just cover a lot of, like, Middle Eastern stuff. So I think if you're young and you don't really know too much about politics, you just go look at that and look at what's on TV and be like, oh, that's where they say the bad guys are, I'll go there.
Interesting. Yeah, because he doesn't start small. I mean, he starts pretty large. He's like, I'm going to the Middle East, like, and, you know, I mean, there's no big statement in the comic, right? Like, where he's like, I'm going to go take care of stuff in the Middle East. But I mean,
yeah,
he decides to go after the big fish first. And so
yeah,
you just didn't want to sort of, like, have him, like I said, stop a bank robbery, like you said, stop a bank robbery or anything, or?
Yeah, I didn't. There's a lot of reasonings to it that come up in later issues. That's why I'm being so guarded about, like, why. Because I think I want to keep some of the dialogue where he talks about why. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of guarded for now, but I'm trying to think of something I can say without giving up too much of it.
Well, what about?
I think he wants to kind of keep his identity secret. So if he started somewhere in the States, it gives more of a, it makes it more likely that he'd be found out who he was compared to if he just went running across the world.
Oh, I see. I see what you're saying. And what about, say, sort of like, is this sort of a bit of a wish fulfillment in any way? Like, kind of wishing that somebody, I mean, we all kind of have that, right? Like, I mean, where do your politics sort of lie as far as, like, those issues are concerned? Because, I mean, yeah, it would be great for somebody to go and, like, I mean, that's sort of like the big thing with World War II comics, right? Is like,
yeah,
well, why didn't he just go, why didn't Superman just show up and start kicking ass? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where does your sort of politics in the spectrum lean on that issue or those issues?
I don't know. I actually, I'm kind of a little indecisive when it comes to stuff like that. Like, I can totally see everything as far as, like, ISIS doing bad things, but, like, it's not so much wish fulfillment than I just wanted to kind of show a story that things are always a bit more complicated than they seem, and you never really know what might happen. Because,
yeah,
like, you'll see the story will go and you'll see, like, there's always consequences to everything that happens, and sometimes things don't go exactly where you think they will.
Same
thing with politics. I think that's just always happened throughout all of history. Like, people go and they take action against these certain things, but, like, we never could have predicted, like, the whole Berlin Wall thing after World War II and all that, and, like, communism springing up, just, like, all these different things that happen because of actions that countries take.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing is, I mean, I should state, I feel like I might be giving your story a little bit of the short shrift with, like, my shortcut language. I feel like that you're sort of addressing it in a very smart way. I don't think that this is like, it's not a two-dimensional way of approaching the story, you know? So I apologize if it's coming across like that. It's definitely not. I mean, I think that it seems like you have some sort of obviously you have a way where you want this to go, but it's definitely not as easy as, like, you know, hero shows up, hero kicks ass, hero, you know, everyone's happy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's more complex than that.
I think, like, superhero comics for a long time was originally formed as a type of escapism.
Yeah.
Like, you want to pretend you're this dude, and because that would be really freaking awesome, right?
Yeah.
And that's really cool because I love watching the Marvel movies and stuff like that. But when I started writing the story, I started thinking about, well, would it be that awesome? Because, like, if you have all these powers, like, in real life, it's already hard enough to decide what you want to do. I'm sure everyone goes through that, right? Where they're like, you know, they get out of high school and they're like, well, what the hell do I do with my life?
Yeah.
And you have things that you think you're good at, right? And sometimes you're not able to like live up to what you think your talents are. Now imagine that you're super, super powerful and you have all these talents and you feel like, well, I can freaking do anything. Why aren't things always going my way? Like, I think you would take sort of like that human element that everyone goes through and just multiply it by like a million.
I mean, I think it's always been sort of a really interesting question that people can't seem to apply to certain characters, because you're right, of the corporate interests, or, you know, the need to keep them, you know, sort of pure in their own way without any political entanglements or stuff like that, which is was one of my always big frustrations with sort of the Superman comics, which is like, come on, like, take a stance on something. You can't just be like, everything's great. You know what I mean? So but it's interesting that what you've done is you've taken a character, like you had said, Thor, Superman, and you've kind of put him in the three-dimensional world, and I'm really interested to see like where it goes. I mean, what was it about, like, because you say you read Image and Dark Horse and stuff, what was it about the superpowers that intrigued you so much, like, you know, that sort of character?
Well, the whole interest in superpowers and stuff like that was like, from being a kid, I was more familiar with the superheroes from, like I said, like the animated TV shows and stuff.
Yeah.
And what started me thinking about that in real world situations is I was reading Why the Last Man by Vertigo.
Oh, yeah.
You know that comic, right?
Absolutely.
And basically what Brian K. Vaughan did is he looked at the world and said, well, let me just change one thing about it. Like, all the men die, right?
Yeah.
And everything else has to stay the same. So I'm not going to use any other fantasy. I'm just going to take one thing and I'm going to change it and see what happens.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't much longer after that that I was watching Twilight Zone, and I listened to this interview by Rod Serling, the creator of Twilight Zone, where he said the best science fiction just changes one thing and, like, keeps everything else the same. So I was like, all of a sudden that gave me an idea, like, as far as like comics went, like, well, what if I do that and just take sort of like my favorite, like, sort of superhero, like, archetypes from when I was a kid and just go do that.
Yeah. But what kept you sort of from, you know, because it's been done a lot, you know, obviously everyone has their own take on, you know, I keep going back to Superman. I apologize for that.
Oh,
but what I'm saying is, like, he's sort of was like the big first one, right? So that's why I'm using him as an example. I mean, this sort of thing has been done a lot, but you kind of went a little bit of your own way with it. I mean, I'm sure you've read, what was it, Supreme Power, or, you know, what was it, you know, oh God, what was it? Straczynski, he did, it's Power Supreme or Supreme Power, where it's like Hyperion, and it's like a version, alternate version of, they're in the Marvel Universe, they're like an alternate version of the Justice League. Have you ever read that, Supreme Power?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. Like, all right.
I really haven't.
Basically, it was kind of another realistic, but it was like taking sort of those Justice League characters and putting them in the real world. But your thing is much more grounded in reality. You know what I mean? There's no other fantastic elements yet. So what was it that made you go in that direction?
I just really wanted to create the most realistic superhero story ever. I think, like, everything I've ever seen, even when they try to keep things grounded, has just always been like, well, maybe at the very least they try to make the government create like some giant super robot or something to battle him, something, so they can tie everything together nicely and like a knot at the end of the story.
And you're not going to do that?
And I'm never going to do that throughout the story. I don't think realistically that the government would throw together some weapon like that so quickly after someone like comes around and just have something like that. I wanted to show more internal struggles and instead of just like physical, like everything's just always about like what can physically defeat this like good guy in like comics. But what if it wasn't about like being physically defeated? What if it was just about like making wrong choices and things like that?
Sure.
Trying to deal with that.
Sure.
Like, I don't when I did watch Superman, one thing that like I always thought was interesting about it is like people always boil down his weakness as being like kryptonite or yeah. something like that, and which it is in it. But in what story was I reading? When I was reading Red Sun, like you kind of realize throughout the story, it never quite says it, but his real weakness is just guilt. Like not being able to live up to his own expectations and then like not having done everything correctly. I think that's his real weakness. Uh-huh. Everyone always looks at kryptonite. So I don't know. That idea sort of just appealed to me. Yeah, I just don't think super battles are necessary to keep a story interesting.
Sure, sure. So when did you start reading comics?
I started reading comics in my junior year of high school. I mean, before that, I read some when I was like younger.
Uh-huh.
And then the impressions of the ones I read when I was younger, because I didn't know any better, I was like, oh, well, those were for kids and I don't read them anymore. Then my friend introduced me to comics. He gave me like Why the Last Man my uh-huh. junior year. He uh-huh. gave me a bunch of other ones that I can't remember now. A lot of them were manga because I half grew up in Taiwan, actually.
Oh, okay.
So I'm trying to remember what those was. He gave me Death Note.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've read some of that. Yeah.
Yeah, so I kind of grew up reading both of them, like.
So you started off like right out of the bat with the good stuff.
Yeah, like I did not read superhero comics. Then my friend just gave me all these like non-superhero comics, and so that's sort of what I've just kind of stuck with. Like I go back and right now, like I've tried to read some superhero comics, especially now that I'm writing something that involves something sort of like that, but I have a really hard time getting through them.
Uh-huh.
Like I think the only ones that I'm really reading right now is Batman, the Scott Snyder run of it, which is really cool. I read the first like 10 issues of the New 52 Action Comics and I just couldn't get into it that much.
Yeah.
I'm with and,
you, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I've read, like, I read these various just single issues of, like, the New 52, and every time I've tried to start, like, well, maybe I'll like this line, maybe I'll like Justice League, and I'm like, ah, not really. Then they started Grayson, and I was like, well, I'll read a couple issues of that. Like, I don't know. This still just isn't my thing. When so- Image comes oh, no. out with something like Revival and it's like something completely different, like about people coming back from the dead but not being zombies, then I'm like hooked in and I read the entire thing, but I don't know.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's the great thing about the comics market now is that you have that choice to be able to not read superheroes. I mean, there was a very long time, you know, when I was younger. I think that you're much younger than I am. I mean, do you mind my asking how old you are?
I'm 25.
Yeah, I'm about 20 years older than you. I'm like 23. I mean, I'm 43. So I'm going to be 43 this year. Hello, don't push it. Anyway, my point being is that I don't want to sound condescending. You are growing up, or you have grown up in a time where there were like plenty of choices and, you know, where you had like, you know, like I always tell this story where I went to Borders was a bookstore that shut down like several years ago. I don't know if you remember them, but you would go and they had a comic book aisle and a lot of it was manga and there were all these teenage girls like reading comics. And I turned to my wife and I was like, that didn't happen when I was a kid. Like it was like there were no teenage girls reading comics. Like where were all these girls when I was, you know? So the market has changed and grown and it appeals to a much wider audience. So I think that that's very lucky that somebody like you who's, you know, superheroes isn't their thing. I mean, sometimes it isn't my thing either, but I grew up on that. So that's like kind of like in my DNA. It's ridiculous. Yeah. But you know, I mean, like my first instinct to you is to say like, oh, well, you like Image Comics. Why don't you read Invincible? You know what I mean? It's like, and that's like a superhero book, you know, it's like me trying to get you over to the dark side in a way, I guess.
That's funny that you say that. Invincible is the one like pure superhero comic that I read like all the way through. I think I'm only two issues behind on it and they're 120 now.
Yeah.
But if you pay attention to Invincible, it's almost like a lot of it's like parodying superheroes too also. So maybe that's why it appeals to me more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting because some of the reasons that I really enjoy Invincible are because, like you say, I mean, it does take superhero books and kind of twist them around on their head. But at the same time, you can tell that Kirkman is very has a very big love of comics from my era, yeah, like the 80s and possibly like the early 90s. You can see, so there's like a balance of that where you run into a lot of like superhero deconstructionist comics, which yours is not, that just really love to take this idea and just like pull it apart and almost like in a way that that hates the superhero, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And your book is not like that. Your book is like taking something that you know, is fantastical and positive in a way, but also applying a real twist to it, because that's kind of what I liked about your book. You know, I'll just say it right out. There was sort of, you know, like the lead character has some really bad things happen to him, and you know, he goes into a war zone, and at least within these first three issues, there's a positivity to it. Does that make sense to?
Yeah.
Was there any effort by you wanting to do that, or did that just spring naturally when you started writing? Or
when I'm writing it, it almost just kind of just happens naturally, because I'm really just trying to imagine what I think would really happen.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, the next part just happens what I think would logically happen in my head. So I thought all the way through to the ending that way. So I'm not really, even though I don't read superhero comics, in no way do I want to like disrespect people that read them. So it wasn't about like, I hate superheroes and I'm going to write a story that shows that superheroes are stupid.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I was just trying to really come up with what I think would really happen. And that's what really the whole book is about.
Yeah, I mean, it's really funny because you surprise me, because like when I was reading the book, I was like, this guy likes Superman, he's got to be a Superman fan, you know, and he's got to be a superhero fan, and it's very interesting to me that you're like, no, I don't really read superhero books, you know, I'm much more interested in the indie stuff, which, you know, as I said, I am too. But you're also, because usually when, like I said, when somebody's trying to do a book that's like superheroes in the real world, they are trying to show how stupid the idea is. They are trying to show how ridiculous it is to wear a cape or a costume or whatever. And you don't have a cape or a costume. But at the same time, like, I feel that your book has respect for the source material. Does that make sense? Like respect for where it came from. And that's something that me as a reader, you know, I really appreciate. So it's like one of the positive aspects of your book, you know?
Yeah. There's really like everything about like writing it, even though I don't read superhero comics, it's not coming from any sort of malice or anything.
I just
want to imagine what would really happen.
Yeah.
So the fact that he doesn't wear a costume is just, I think, has to do with like, you get to the, I don't want to give away the ending in the first book, but obviously if you start getting into what he's doing, like I imagine it happened like right after that.
Yeah.
Is when he starts doing it. I don't think he'd throw together some costume. In some ways, I think he's trying to cope with some of his own internal struggles when he goes over there. Like, a lot of stuff doesn't go well for him, like you said in the book. And like, I think there's part of him where it's sort of like escapism, trying to feel useful.
Yeah.
So I think you just head straight over there, not really worry about that sort of thing.
That's really interesting, because like I said, you know, the temptation for when somebody writes a character that bad stuff happens to, that they would do bad stuff, you know, and that's not what your guy does, at least, you know, in the beginning of the book, the way the book is starting. I mean, do you like dark stories or like, because you're not, that your story is not dark. So I'm trying to frame this question in a way that makes sense, but like, do you gravitate towards darker stuff, or do you appreciate something with a more positive streak to it? Like when you're reading your own books, or is it just a little bit of everything?
It's a little bit of everything. Every story is supposed to end a certain way. Like, I don't know, like there's stories that are meant to be dark and stories that are meant to be light.
Yeah.
It wouldn't make sense if you took like, I don't know, when they try to make stuff too dark for no reason, it doesn't make sense. Like, some things are just supposed to be lighthearted and have a lighthearted ending. I don't know. Just, I don't even know how to answer that question. I like everything. Okay. I like everything. And if it's dark and it was written well, then I like it. If it's lighthearted and it was written well, I like it. Just, yeah. Was the writing good?
Well, it just seems like, you know, this is like your first big project. And, you know, whether you know it or not, your inclination has sort of drifted over towards, like, you know, this could have very well been like, you know, The Authority or something like that, where he shows up and is like, I'm just going to kill and rape everything. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's not the way you went. So, you know, that I was just wondering, that was like something in my head. Oh, does he just like, does he appreciate sort of the lighter side of stuff? Because, you know, there are writers who in comics mm-hmm. who are very popular, very famous,
yeah,
and they seem to drift just towards that, and they love like pulling yeah. stuff apart. And your book is not like that, at least not yet. I don't know what's going to yeah. happen.
Well, you know, a lot of the ideas that I have actually come from some of my own life. And I remember after my dad died, the main character's father dies too. That
don't spoil your
sudden.
Yeah, anyway.
Oh, okay. No, I think that happens so early in the first issue that that's it's okay. not too big of a deal.
Yeah.
But when that first happens, I think you start trying to, at least to me, it made me want to like think about his life and like live up to his expectations. All of a sudden, like it's like he's constantly there
yeah.
and you're constantly worrying about like, am I being the person that my dad would want me to be?
Uh-huh.
Especially like right after a parent dies, I feel like that happens a lot to a lot of people.
Oh yeah.
And I think that that's something the character's going through. So I think that influences his decisions. So it wasn't like I decided he was going to be a light character. Everything he does, I really sit down and try to think what influences him, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. So you've got 15 issues like planned out for this, mm-hmm. right? And yes. how are things on track for the fourth issue? I mean, like, are you seeing yourself? Like, I guess the goal is already completed on the Kickstarter, right? I mean, you made yeah. your $3. But I mean, yep. you do have to logically get to a certain point to make issue 4. Mm-hmm. Are you on track for that? Or is that, you know?
Yes.
Okay.
I put enough money aside to make sure I have the art to finish at least the first 5 issues.
Like, oh, wow. From
when this began. So I spent a lot of time just saving up for it. So the art will get done for at least the first story arc.
Yeah.
I have a 15 issue plan, but they're divided into 5 issue arcs.
Okay.
So I at least wanted to make sure to finish one of them.
Oh.
I mean, I think the end of the 5th one is where it will really shine for what I have planned. So I'm hoping that will be enough to get enough interest to take it all the way to 15.
Sure, sure. And was it always your intention to self-publish, or did you look for a publisher? Or
I've read a lot about breaking into the comic industry, and yeah. at this point, there's a lot of things like you can't send submissions to DC or Marvel anymore. Not yeah. that I really would want to, but it just shows a lot about the market, like yeah. just oversaturation. And you can send stuff to Image and Dark Horse and them, but everyone that I ever talk to, like if you read articles by like Jim Sub and people who are in the comic industry, a lot of them, they had to start off with indie work, because to get in with those guys, they'll be like, well, like any resume, can you tell me what you've done in the past?
Yeah. yeah.
And I'd never done a comic in the past. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it myself. I don't want to have to go through all that. I just want to focus on the story. I want to do my comic. I don't want to worry about like the whole job aspect of it for now.
That's interesting. I mean, you know, because obviously you're saying you've planned out the 5 issues. It's expensive to do each issue. I mean, you've put a lot of money into this then.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. And so is your dream to, is this the first comic you've ever done?
Yes, this is the first comic I've ever done. It's gotten great reviews, which is crazy. Like IGN gave it an A+ for the first issue. They used to do these official Comixology submit reviews by this blogger, Fantafix. He was in charge of it. He gave it an A+, and I was like, it was kind of surprising to me.
Oh, really?
And then he actually did a review for the third one just recently. He doesn't run the Comixology submit anymore because he got too busy. So it's not officially IGN giving me an A+ again, but he gave me an A+ again. So it's just been getting really great reviews, which is crazy.
So no, I mean, it is a really good book. I mean, I consider it, you know, I mean, I spent $12. I consider it money well spent, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, funding a Kickstarter, sometimes that's like a shot in the dark, you know, and
yeah,
and you'll get something and you'll be like, well, it's pretty or whatever, but I didn't like the story, or the story was really good. And I mean, mm-hmm. I think this, you've put together a really solid, you know, alternate superhero take, and I really enjoyed it, and I definitely want to keep following it, you know, as it goes on. So I hope that, you know, whenever the next issue comes out, I can contribute again. But I guess, what would your long-term plan, like, do you have other ideas? Are you planning on expanding this universe? Is there, you know, is there, because your website's J. Crow Comics, right?
Yeah.
jcrowcomics.com. So is there going to be like a J. Crow Comics universe, or are you just like, when Super's done at 15, you're sort of done and you want to move on to something else? Like,
I, for these sort of stories, just the way this one works out, I don't think it's made to be a universe type thing, uh-huh. like where you have all different characters that come in and they have their own spin-offs.
Yeah.
It's just not one of the stories that work that way. To me, it's more of like a, because the ending I have in mind is so like specific.
Yeah.
I think of it more like sort of like a Watchmen type thing. Well, I guess now they ended up doing all those like prequel things.
Yeah.
But that wasn't him doing it.
No, that wasn't Alan Moore doing it.
That wasn't Alan Moore doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just sort of like that. I think of it as sort of like a one-and-done story.
Yeah.
I have tons of other ideas. I think, like, obviously, like, writing this story, you can see that I'm sort of like a creative person. I try to come up with stuff.
Sure.
But I have to focus on this right now because I'm doing it on my own. And I'm doing like Kickstarter and stuff that I don't really have time to write out my scripts for my other ideas. I just kind of jot down these random scribblings on like notepad and just what would seem like random words to other people.
Yeah. No, I mean, but you did a comic book signing like over the weekend, right?
Yeah, I did. The first issue, I've signed so many issues of Super One. The first issue has sold 7,000 physical copies of it.
Oh, wow. That's great.
And I've made absolutely no money because I was flying around to conventions to do it. So it just pretty much paid for my travel.
Yeah. Well, see, I mean, that's sort of the economics of comics. You know, the more I talk to comic creators, the more I read, you know, I mean, I've been reading comics for years. I've been into comics. You know, there've been plenty of times where I wanted to start my own comic, but you look at the economics of it and it's like, oh my God, you know, it is a really astounding thing. So kudos to you. You know, it could be a really daunting thing when you look at how much, you know, costs add up, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're saying like 8,000, what was it, 4,000, 8,000 per issue or something?
Well,
like,
it costs 4,000 to illustrate the issue, but if you think of it that way, let's say I like illustrate it for like $4,000, right? And then I go do an offset print. I don't know if anyone's familiar with printing comics, but like, sure. If you print like 500, they can cost $3 each to print.
Yeah.
You're not going to make anything. But if you print like 3,000, the printing process becomes different. So it can go down to like 90 cents or so, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So,
yeah. That's where your profit lies.
If you want to pay back your art team, you still need to, first of all, you need to take the initial investment to pay, like, print like that many, like 2,000-3,000, and if you sell the 2,000-3,000, you generally just about break even.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. And how many of the first issue did you sell again?
7,000, but like I said, I didn't make any money because I was flying around. I did an initial first printing of 3,000. Uh-huh. Everyone said I was crazy because most indie comics sell about 500 issues.
Yeah.
And that year I was doing Salt Lake Comic Con, and I was like, no, I think this is a good story. I was belligerent. And I'm like, people will buy this. And that's so I went ahead and I printed 3,000. I probably wouldn't suggest most people do this. Then I went to Salt Lake Comic Con, and I talked to everyone that passed by, and I sold 600 issues in that one weekend.
That's great. So, good for you. That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, you know, congratulations. I mean, I think this is a really good book. You know, I would highly recommend it, you know, to anyone who's listening. And, you know, I think you've done something. You've made a book that's interesting for the guys that are into superheroes, which is me, and, you know, people who might not be so much into it. And it's very, you know, it feels very authentic. It feels very, and you had a lot of nods in there, like I said earlier, where I was like, that's crypto. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So it was really, you know, it's really well thought out. You know, I mean, you've done some really good stuff. And I know that there's probably people that, you know, look at this sort of thing and are like, oh, I want it to be like a deconstruction, but you're not doing that. So for anyone who is listening, you know, if you're tired of the superhero deconstruction, that's not what this is. This is kind of like a very good, interesting spin on what being a superhero in the quote unquote real world would be. That's the one thing I wanted to ask you is you use a fictional country, right?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, yeah. Any reason for that?
Yeah, the specific reason is because there's so much stuff going on in the Middle East that it's too complicated for people to be able to follow what would be going on if I was made it all different countries where everything was happening. So that way I can like conglomerate all of the stories about what's happening and put it into one country instead.
Okay.
Because a lot of the stories actually come from news swipes. I don't know if people who are familiar with what's going on and read the comic, you're getting something extra because you're going to read it and you're going to be like, oh, I kind of remember that something like this happened, right?
Yeah.
Like a few months ago. And yeah, pretty much every story is influenced by something that really happened somewhere in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And but it wasn't necessarily always in one country. So creating a fictional country gives me the ability to make it simpler for the reader, keep it all in one place, that sort of thing.
That's great. So where can people support your comic? Where can they read it? You know, because I'll put links up on my page, but who knows who listens to it on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever. Where can they find your book?
I highly recommend for now going to the Kickstarter. The Kickstarter's helped the most. First of all, if you're going to buy my comic, it's easier for me when tons of people buy it in mass compared to when you go to my website where you can buy it, jcrowcomics.com. Then I have to go, like, there's single issues and they happen sporadically and I have to go mail them out. So if you do it on the Kickstarter, I can mail them all at once to everybody. It makes it easier for me. Plus, you're getting any pledge level is an exclusive tier. So you'll get special exclusive prints instead. So for right now, at least till July 12th, the best place to get it is from the Kickstarter.
Gotcha. And they go to Kickstarter and just search Super? Or
You can search Super Issue 3. If you're putting up a link on your podcast too, they should just be able to go click on it.
Yeah.
Another way to easy way to go find it is if you just go to www.jcrowcomics, which is J-A-Y, crowcomics.com. There's a direct link over to the Kickstarter.
Oh, great. Yeah. So parttimefanboy.com or jcrowcomics.com. That's great.
Yep.
Well, thank you for your time, Joshua. I really appreciate it. You know, I hope that my questions weren't too crazy. I'm just a big Superman fan, and I was like, oh, there's Superman in here, and, you know, anything like that. Just, you know, I'm not accusing you of anything or,
you know. Yeah.
But
yeah, I totally understand. I definitely wanted to create something that was that would appeal to both type of people, like people like me that don't read superhero comics, and but at the same time, people that like do like superhero comics. So
yeah.
I wanted to put some nods to like some things that I did know about because I spend a lot of time researching superheroes, like especially through like Wikipedia and stuff.
Nice.
Internet. Like just kind of looking at their histories and stuff, because when I was writing this story, I'm like, well, I need to kind of know like where the whole genre came from and like the whole history of it. So
well, that's very smart of you. You're a very wise man. Well, you know, I wish you nothing but success. You know, definitely keep me on your mailing list. And, you know, I look forward to the next issue. My name is Christian Horn. This is Part-Time Fanboy. And I have been on the line with Joshua Crowther, right?
Yep.
And your book is super. And please go support his Kickstarter. It is a book that I highly recommend. And I think that fans of superhero comics and non-superhero comics will enjoy it as well. So thanks for coming on Part-Time Fanboy. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Anytime. And let me know when that next issue comes out.
Shouldn't be too long. With there being Kickstarter, obviously it's slower for indies, but it's pretty much finished and written. I just need to get to my editor.
Okay. Well, great. And thank you out there for listening. And this has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Part-Time Fanboy.